on our VIP line, Dan Rust. Dan is the author of Workplace Poker, Are You Playing the Game or Just Getting Played? He's also the founder of a group called Frontline Learning, which is an international corporate training publisher, and he spent more than 30 years on the front lines of corporate America helping people develop skills and strategies to boost their careers. Good morning, Dan. Thanks so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Hey, Ross. Good morning. Great to be with you.
I was reading through quite a bit of your book yesterday, and it's really fascinating. What I like so much about your book, Dan, is it's not just a list. Do this, do that, do the other thing. It really is a book about psychology, even more than it's a book about careers. Do you see it that way, or is that just?
Oh, without a doubt. In fact, when HarperCollins first started talking to me about writing the book, to be honest, I wasn't all that thrilled with the concept, just because I've read so many business books over the years, and you know, and seen so many PowerPoint presentations and so many bullet points on, you know, the 10 tips to do this or the 8 strategies to do that. And at a certain point, your eyes glaze over. And what I said to them was, either we have a way of going deeper than that and doing it in a way that's entertaining and fun and kind of, you know, smartassy a little bit, just so that it fits with me, or I'm probably not the guy. And eventually we came to a point where we had an agreement regarding the kind of book that we were going to produce, but it required an awful lot of research into real world stories. You know, what was really going on with people in the workplace, and using those stories as part of the experience in the reading.
One of the things that jumps out immediately from the beginning of your book is, and I suppose it's implied as much as stated, but when you were thinking about how your career is going to develop, it's not just about you, right? Because you don't get to make your own decisions about whether you get promoted. It's about the other guy. It's about your coworkers. It's about your boss. And I love the way that you get into, and maybe you can tell me how you got to this metaphor, but relating it to playing poker, and you watch people's tells and stuff like that. Talk a little bit about this. You know, how you approach thinking about coworkers.
Well, the short version of the story is, in terms of the poker metaphor, I think you'll be interested in this. I learned to play poker on a U.S. Navy submarine back in the 80s, and we were on a very long deployment, and you know, you only have so many options back then. I mean, we didn't have, you know, all of the DVDs that they have now. And so the nightly poker game became the thing, and you're playing with real money, not big money, but real money. And so poker became a part of my life, just loving the game and learning to play, not just the card game but the people game. But moving into the civilian world, I have to say that probably the first 10 years of my civilian career, I didn't get that there was this people game under everything else. I really had the mindset that if I do good work, if I do a job that has clear objectives and I achieve my objectives and I excel, if I just keep my head down, that should equate to career progress. And to some degree, it does. That's the challenging part of the game. It's not that keeping your head down and doing a good job will cause failure. No, you'll do okay. But you'll probably also notice there are other people who are doing better, who are sometimes getting the promotion that you thought, man, as I'm scratching my head, shouldn't that have been me? Or other people who are achieving a level of success that you're not achieving, and you're wondering, I'm brighter, I'm working harder, I'm more ambitious, I'm more talented, or at least as talented. Why isn't it happening? And ultimately, after spending a lot of time thinking and observing people in the workplace, I came to understand there is this game under the game, and it's not a negative. It's not about backstabbing office politics. It's about the human dynamics and really reading people and reading the situation and reading the business. And I have to say, when I talk to people about this initially, many of them, particularly younger people, get a little overwhelmed, thinking, I have barely enough energy just to do my job. Now you're talking about thinking about all of these things and observing all of these things. And at first, if you haven't been doing it, it can be a little energy draining. until it becomes a habit. Once it becomes a habit and just part of the way you are, it actually gives you energy because every meeting is more interesting because you're not just focused on the PowerPoint slide screen. You're actually focused on the screen, sure, and paying attention, and on the people in the meeting. And there's oftentimes a whole lot going on in that meeting that's just a little level under the surface.
You know, it seems to me, and I like playing poker too, the difference between being good at something and great at something, no matter what it is doing a lot of the small stuff right. And one of the things in poker, and you talk about it in your book, you know, one of the things in poker is you look at your opponents. You don't just look at your own cards. You watch how your opponents behave because sometimes they do things subconsciously that they don't even know they're doing that can tell you a lot about them. And you start your book off with the chapter Poker on a Unicycle. And I want to ask you about one concept in there that I thought was really interesting, and that is Be Jane Goodall. Tell us about that.
Well, what I found is if you're really trying to read people and read a situation, and if you have any emotional investment in that situation, your ability to read it drops dramatically. Whether the emotional investment is frustration at a bad boss or being impressed, being overly impressed by someone, it reduces your ability to read them and the situation. Or if you are angry, or if you're attracted, romantically interested in someone, almost any emotional reaction to someone or a situation, it reduces your ability to step back. And when I say be Jane Goodall, what I was referring to was back in the 70s when Jane Goodall was observing chimpanzees in the wild. If you read her actual journals, you see that she saw some great chimpanzee behavior, loving chimpanzee behavior, but she also saw some pretty horrendous stuff too. Chimpanzees beating on each other, killing each other, stealing babies, killing babies, doing a variety of things that, you know, in the human would just view as horrendous. And she simply dutifully noted everything that she observed in a very objective manner because her goal was to understand, not to judge chimpanzees. Now, I understand it's easier to be dispassionate when it comes to chimps than it is maybe to the people that we work with. And yet, if you're going to be a dispassionate observer of human dynamics in your workplace, you have to step back and be Jane Goodall. You have to not get frustrated at that boss who is changing the rules arbitrarily or doing things that, and I'm not saying you have to accept illegal behavior or unethical behavior. I mean, there's a line that people cross. I'm not saying you have to accept it, but if you're trying to read the situation, step back and simply observe and assume for a moment that nobody's a jerk, nobody's an ass, and nobody is a genius. Nobody is, better than or smarter than everyone else in the room. If you step back and dispassionately observe, it's amazing. Without any other people reading skills, like trying to read body language or tells, that alone, if you can master that, it's amazing what gets revealed to you over time as you watch people.
Much of your book is examples of people, and you change the names to protect the innocent and the guilty, but examples of people, things they've done or not done, that influence their career. And some of them I found particularly eye-opening, and there's one that I'm remembering. I'm not sure where. I've got the book in front of me, but I don't remember what page it's on, but this really stuck with me. And it was a guy who worked at a bank and wanted a promotion and ended up, and I'll let you tell the story and why it's important, but I'm talking about the guy who had a project proposed to him and decided not to do it because he thought it would fail, and then it did fail, and what happened from there?
Well, the reason it's a great story, and when I the great thing about the initial reporting on the book was being able to, I only wanted to share stories where I knew two or three different perspectives, because, you know, it's easy for someone just to kind of complain and moan about a particular scenario. In this situation, I knew enough people in the environment where I really understood the end-to-end story, and essentially he was playing it safe. His career strategy was to get assigned to projects that were, you know, more than likely going to do okay, and avoid projects, avoid scenarios where things were going to fail. But he misread the business, and he misread leadership, because the leadership of this banking business, this was from back in the early 90s, they were trying to drive into some new markets, try some new innovative things, and they were looking for leaders who would stay compliant. Of course, you have to be compliant with regulations, and you have to, you know, do the job correctly. But at the same time, they were looking for people who would lead new initiatives that, in fact, might fail, that might be a little bit on the edge. And ultimately, the guy who agreed to lead this initiative, and it was an initiative with ATMs in certain markets where it was kind of iffy whether the ATMs were going to be profitable, because even ATMs require a certain amount of maintenance, and you have to have a certain amount of volume on your ATM to make it make sense. Well, so the initiative in this particular market ultimately failed, but the guy who was leading it, the senior leadership team, what they took away from it was they liked his style, they liked his willingness to take risks, they liked his willingness to push the envelope, and ultimately his career took off like a shot. And the great learning from the main person in the story that I was interviewing, the great thing about him is he didn't just end up being one of those complainers who tells that story for the next 20 years and says, here's how I got screwed. Can you believe it? This guy led in a big initiative, and it failed, and he gets the promotion, and my career is flatlined. Can you believe it? Because we all have those people in the workplace who they've been wronged, and you've been wronged, I've been wronged, we've all been wronged, and the real enticing thing is to tell the story of being wronged, and then to tell it over and over and over again, and usually it gets bigger, and you become more wronged over time. But this guy instead, he had enough insight to realize, okay, I misread this, and I have this risk aversion that is killing off my career prospects. And in fact, he had enough self-awareness to understand that basically I'm a really nice guy. Everyone likes me. Everyone appreciates me. But I'm not the driver. I there's something missing in my leadership personality, so to speak. And he took action. I mean, the good news is he had some self-awareness and took some action, and it wasn't easy for him because he was really going against his own almost behavioral style, but it did unlock some real career potential for him. And the great thing was that his senior leadership team recognized not only that he was making an adjustment, but that it was hard, and he was doing something that was not natural for him, and he got some good recognition for that, and his career ultimately began to take off. But what I tried to do in workplace poker was find those stories where there was an end-to-end, kind of a beginning, middle, and end. And in the end, some of the stories work out well, some not so well. I mean, that's the way it is in the real world. But even the stories where things don't necessarily work out well, that can be a great learning experience for the rest of us, so that you don't have to spend 20 years to come to the realization that there's this other game and you have to get better at playing this other game.
We're talking with Dan Rust, his new book, Workplace Poker. I've actually got a link to, so you can buy it on Amazon if you just go to my blog at khow.com and go to today's Intellectual Ammunition post, as with every day, and you can get right to directly to the Amazon link from there. We've only got about 4 minutes left, Dan. I want to ask you two things. Let's see if we can do two things sort of quickly. One is you have a whole chapter on self-promotion, and I've often struggled with that. I mean, as a media figure, I have to self-promote. My previous career was as a self-employed financial markets trader with no customers, no clients, no nothing, and I never had to self-promote. What do people need to know who are in sort of a fairly standard kind of career path about self-promotion?
Well, the first thing to understand is when we say self-promotion in the workplace, we are not talking about Donald Trump-style self-promotion. And love or hate Donald Trump, you get what I mean. There's a certain bombast verbosity from Donald Trump that works for him. And I would say if any of your listeners happen to be New York real estate moguls, okay, then that will work for you. But in the general workplace, if you've got a guy down the hall who is, you know, Donald Trumpish in his style, it's not going to work for him. The best self-promoters don't appear to be self-promoters. Now, many of them are very consciously promoting themselves in the workplace, but they're doing it in a way that's gracious. They're doing it in a way that actually works for other people and makes other people want to work with them more and want to align with them. And so what I do in the book is I just lay out some very specific positive self-promotion strategies that are kind of stealthy, that no one is going to say, oh, look who's tooting his own horn once again. Instead, though, they will raise your brand in that work environment and do it in a way where you're not going to be putting other people off.
And I think one of the things that you note that I like is it doesn't hurt your brand if you also promote and appreciate other people.
Without a doubt, particularly if it's genuine and authentic, the raising up of other people in the workplace absolutely is something that will raise your own brand. And you have to be, again, cautious or careful about the way you do it, but just be, you know, it's not a zero-sum game. If you give other people recognition, it doesn't mean it's being taken away from you.
Let's see if we can do two other things quickly. Page 165, you write, "It's not fair, but women pay a higher price for their weight gain than men do." Talk to us about that a little bit.
Okay, I'll be fast, but first of all, we all pay the price. And it's unfortunate, but we all pay the price. And so if someone is serious about their career acceleration, what I try to do in that chapter is help them understand who you are physically. It's a part of the brand. It's a part of the daily billboard that you bring into the office. And you've got to do what you can with what God has given you and with what time has allowed you to keep. And we all tend to put on a few pounds every year over the years. And if you've, over the last decade or two, added 5, 10, 15, 20 pounds, bottom line, it's costing you. And you've got to decide, is it worth it to make a change or is it not? But there's no doubt that it's costing you in terms of career acceleration.
Now, let's see if we can do this last one also quickly. And you could probably write a whole book on it, but just very briefly, a few bullet points on the proper ways to use or improper ways to use social media as a career tool.
Number one, you just have to accept there is no purely personal social media anymore. The world of Facebook is for my friends and LinkedIn is for the office, that's gone. Everything has a professional impact. Now, that doesn't mean you treat the two exactly the same, but the world sees everything. And this is probably hardest for younger generations to understand, that just because Kim Kardashian is comfortable posting a certain kind of thing on social media, that doesn't mean it's appropriate for you. So you have to assume whatever you are posting, everyone is seeing. So that's on the negative side. On the positive side, there are huge opportunities to build your personal and professional brand through social media. And so in the book, I kind of lay out a lot of bullet points on how you can do that and make it a tool for your career, not something that's working against it.
Dan Rust's fascinating new book, Workplace Poker. If you're trying to get ahead in your career, there are tips in here, information, stories in here that really will change the way you think about your job and think about getting ahead in life. Dan, it's a great book. Thanks for your time. Great conversation as well. And everybody can get the book. If you just go to my blog at kao.com,
hey,
there's
so
a link
much,
to
Ross.
It. Thanks a
That's
lot,
fantastic.
Dan. Thank really you. Appreciate it.